Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule, it's just whenever I finish a book, I do the review, stick it up here on the podcast feed. Today is going to be a bit strange, well it's not strange, but it's a strange setup for the next episode because I'm going to be reviewing a book today called The Abyss Beyond Dreams, a novel of the Commonwealth by Peter F. Hamilton. And the next episode that we're going to get to is actually Juliana has been reading, listening to the audiobooks of Pandora's Star and Judas Unchained for a long, long time, maybe for 6 months or so it's taken her to get through the two audiobooks of that. And we'll be talking about them the next episode. So we're going to go a bit Peter F. Hamilton heavy for these two episodes. But first of all, let me talk about this one, The Abyss Beyond Dreams. It was published this year, just came out on Audible and as an audiobook a few weeks ago. And I thought, well, I pre-ordered it. And then and I got a little message on my phone saying, hey, this book's now available. You pre-ordered it a while ago. And I was like, great, let's get it. There's a few reasons why I read this book. First of all, is because it's Peter F. Hamilton. He releases, you know, a new science fiction book every 2 years or so, and I generally enjoy his stuff quite a lot. I was just looking through the episodes list thing here. If you actually go to sfbrp.com, click on the episode lists link, and you can see all of the books that I reviewed, and you can click sort by author, and then you can, of course, you can see everything here. So I've reviewed The Dreaming Void, Temporal Void, Evolutionary Void, generally 3.5 to 4 stars. They're Fallen Dragon, 4 stars. Great North Road, I enjoyed that a lot, 4.5 stars. So, you know, generally a good author. I've enjoyed most of almost all of his books. I've enjoyed quite well, so I thought, oh, I'll just give it a go. And another good reason that I thought I'll get to this straight away is because it's 22 hours and 27 minutes, and we're promised a standalone novel. It is the first part of a new series, but the new series is only 2 books, so it's kind of like a not like the story continues from this book through to the next book, through to the next book, like it did in the Void trilogy. It's like, okay, first book is the setup, the second book is continuing action, third book is resolution. I knew that was going to be a full resolution, or that's what I heard about this book anyway. And it's true, this book is it could be a standalone novel. I'm not sure, I guess you could probably read it without reading any of the other Commonwealth books or any other Peter Hamilton. I guess it would probably stand alone, but it is a bit weird because in a way this book is kind of in dialogue, it kind of talks, it covers quite a bit of the same material or quite a few of the same topics as other books, certainly the Void trilogy, because it's still set in the same place. Most of the action here takes place inside the Void. And there is a main character, and I made a note of his name. I wasn't quite sure of the spelling, but it's pronounced in the audiobook Sylvester, kind of as a Sylvester. And he's kind of a new Ediard, and Ediard was a main character one of the main characters within the Void, in the Dreaming Void. And yeah, so they kind of have a parallel story. It's like, okay, all of the stuff that took place inside the Void took place on a planet called Macathran. Maybe it was the city was called Macathran, but it was on one planet. And for some reasons, they go inside. Nigel Sheldon, who you'll know from the Commonwealth books, from the Pandora's Star, and that kind of thing. He goes inside the Void to track down Ediard, or to track down the planets that Ediard is on, to kind of learn more about it's like a fact-finding mission for the Rael, which are the aliens in the Commonwealth. Again, the most powerful aliens there in the Commonwealth. They're like, hey, go into the Void for us, meet up with the other humans in there and see what you can find out. See if you can find out the secrets of the Void, how to work it, how it will work, how it might not work, whatever. Go inside, see what you can find. So he does. He thinks he's going to turn up on Ediard's planet. He doesn't. He turns up on a different planet instead, called Bienvenido. And so Bienvenido isn't quite like the same as Macathran or the planet of in the previous book, but there are parallels, lots of parallels. It's the same magic system. They've got a similar religion, not quite the same religion, about when you die, your soul is fulfilled, and if you've led a good life, you get taken to the heart of the Void. And if you haven't been... And if you're not, you get taken and thrown into the hell of the Void. You get kind of cast out of the Void, and you don't get to live on with the Star Lords or whatever they're called. Starflyers, whatever. Not Starflyers. Starflyers are something different. But so yeah, it's kind of like a parallel book. It's told more from the point of view of, it's with the knowledge that there is someone from the Commonwealth going into the Void and living in a planet where, you know, telekinesis exists and farsight exists and and communication via, you know, telepathy exists, and mind reading exists, and all these other kind of things exist within the void. So there's a mix between fantasy, like kind of like, you know, all the fantasy kind of magic stuff, at the same time, Commonwealth technology, so like super advanced alien technology turns up, or still, I guess it's both human technology, turns up in the void. Also within the void, there is kind of like a zones of thought kind of thing going on there. Whereas when you head into the center of the galaxy where the void is, or technology doesn't work properly. So when you fly in there with a spaceship, it stops working. You don't get the faster than light stuff. The computer stopped working. So when Nigel Sheldon goes inside, he takes in lots of more biological style technology, biotechnology stuff, rather than mechanical and quantum technology stuff. So so that's the basic setup. Even though I guess that's the basic setup, isn't it? Nigel Sheldon goes into the void to see how he can sort out the void. That's kind of what it was sold to me as when I heard about this book, and also the blurb. When images of lost civilization are dreamed by a self-proclaimed prophet of the age, Nigel Sheldon, inventor of the wormhole technology and creator of the Commonwealth Society, is asked to investigate. So when I started reading this book, I'll talk through what it was like to read this book. I think that's the kind of the best way to review this, kind of like what it felt like as I was reading it. First of all, read by John Lee, who is a good audiobook narrator. The last time I listened to John Lee narrate something, he didn't narrate Great North Road. That was Toby Longworth. But John Lee did narrate the other temporal, like the Dreaming Void. He did narrate the Void trilogy, but I read all of those books as paper books. But I know John Lee mostly from his narration of Alistair Reynolds' books, like Revelation Space and The Prefect and stuff. So suddenly I'm getting two different British science fiction, space opera kind of people, and suddenly the other voice is reading. I was thinking, oh, will this feel like an Alistair Reynolds book? And it turns out, no, it doesn't, because Alistair Reynolds does very kind of tight dialogue, tight phrasing. His books are long, but they're long and dense. And Peter F. Hamilton has long and not dense books. So straight away I was like, okay, yes, this feels very much not like a Peter F. Hamilton book. Another thing that felt really weird is that it starts off and we start following one of the colony ships. Now, we know that a colony ship, also like a fleet of colony ships, was sucked into the void. That's where Ediard and all of the humans inside the void who live on the planet of Macathran. I'm sure I've got that planet name wrong. Anyway, they all live there because humans were sucked into the void. Generally, the void is dangerous. It expands and is starting to consume the center of the galaxy. The Rael don't want it, but humans somehow managed to get inside. So we actually pick up with that colony ship, but I didn't work that out straight away because I, again, thought that this book was set after the Void trilogy. I thought it was like a sequel, like a follow-up series to that. And it kind of is, but this is now a flashback where this is actually now happening back like in the past with that very first set of colony ships, the Brandt colony ships. I made a note of that. So the Brandt colony ships, we go in there, we follow Laura, who wakes up and she's a physicist, and they go in and it kind of skips forward over quite a lot of what could be a very boring setup where they just wake up and she just says, oh, we've been here for 6 years already inside the void, and you've only just woken up because everyone's in sleep for the colony ships. You've just woken up, so now you've got to go off on this mission to discover what these things are in this orbit around Earth. No, they're not an orbit around Earth. They're the Lagrange point, L1, between Earth and the Sun. Well, it's not the Earth. It's Bienvenido and the local star. Go and sort out what those things are. They look like trees. So go and look at what those fractal trees are. So she does that. And this, I thought, okay, this is going to be, you know, like the prologue to the book. But the prologue, as part of this audiobook, quite a short audiobook for Peter F. Hamilton, for a standalone book by Peter Hamilton. It's just 20 hours. But like the first 2.5 hours were all Laura. And she goes into, you know, she gets together with four or five other people, and they take the ship over to the trees and they discover what happens. It's quite a lot of adventure, and it's quite interesting, and then discovering this, and then the aliens turn up, and the aliens aren't aliens, the humans, but they're not humans, they're actually aliens, and it's horrific, and something happens, and then it ends in a really, really interesting way, like kind of a cliffhanger way, when she, again, I don't want to give it too much away, but it ends in a really great way, that whole section, but it's like 2.5 hours. And I was like, that is a very long chapter. Normally, Peter F. Hamilton will set up a character, you'll be with them for like 30, 40 pages, and then you'll skip across somewhere else, and you'll be with another character, and then you go across somewhere else, and you'll be with another character. But we stuck with this character for a really long time. I thought, maybe this is what the whole book is going to be about, a really fun space adventure with a, you know, someone from the Commonwealth who's now inside the void, and technology isn't working very well, and aliens turn up, you know, like, this could be really, really interesting. It felt classic, like a classic science fiction story, and it could be read. I reckon if you just wanted a good taste of what Peter F. Hamilton can do with a single character in a single story, you could read, or you could listen to the first 2.5 hours, or you could read book one of this book, and it's a really good story. And I was like, oh, this is really good. This is, I really enjoy this. This is really good. And then it goes on to the next section, and maybe I'm getting the sections out of order a bit here, but it goes into the next section, and it goes, okay, now this is the year. And I was like, oh, what year is this? And then I was like, oh, wait a second. This is Pandora's Sky was then, and then there was Dreaming Void. And now Abyss Beyond Dreams is this set after the Void trilogy or before? And then I was like, oh, maybe it's in the middle, because then they go back to the Commonwealth, and the Rael visit Nigel Sheldon and say, hey, this is happening here. And it talks about Inigo's dream and the dream religion, his cult that's setting up what they call it, the people who want to go into the void in the dreaming void in that first section. And I was like, oh, this is set before that. And then, of course, I looked up the timeline. Pandora's Star started 2380. Abyss Beyond Dreams, 3326. Dreaming Void, 3589. So this actually begins before the Dreaming Void by quite a long way, because it's talking about this Brant colony ships, but then continues like just like a few hundred years before the Dreaming Void, but it's still about the void. But by the time they get into the void, the way time works within the void, thousands of years have gone past. So by the time that, you know, Nigel gets inside of the void, it means that, like, Ediard would be dead for centuries and centuries, because the time works different. So it's kind of, and this is the thing that really confused me, it's a follow-up to the Dreaming Void trilogy. It's set before the Dream trilogy, all of the stuff that happens in the Commonwealth, but set after everything that happens in the Dream Trilogy, which takes place within the void, but then not even on the same planet, on a different planet. And anyway, for me, quite confusing, mainly because I wasn't quite sure what the time was set, but it wasn't a bad thing. Once I actually worked out, oh, this is this time, this is that time. So anyway, Nigel, he goes, right, we've got to break into the Dreamers, religious place. We've got to go and find Inigo, and they do that. And there's a Paul Amayo, like, cameo, I guess. She turns up and they have a conversation with Nigel. And I was like, oh, is she going to be in the book very much? But no, once Nigel gets inside the void, nothing takes place again outside of the void. So even though this says it's a Commonwealth, you know, what was it called? The long title here on Goodreads, The Abyss Beyond Dreams, a novel of the Commonwealth, really only like one fifth or one sixth of the book takes place inside the Commonwealth, and the rest of it takes place inside the void. And there's a few things like, you know, Nigel goes inside the void, but it's not really Nigel, it's a clone of Nigel. And I was like, well, if it's just a clone of Nigel going in, why don't they just send like 8 clones of Nigel inside the void? So it's not just him, he's got some backups. It turns out that's actually what they do. There's Nigel clone Prime, or there's Nigel Prime, and then there's Nigel clone A, and then he's got all these different things which are kind of, they're all based on him. They've got his brain patterns, but they're not fully sentient clones or something. They're kind of like biological machines that go in with him. But then I was thinking, well, why don't they also just, like, if they're gonna clone Nigel and send Nigel, why don't they also clone Paul Amayo and send Paul Amayo inside as well? But I guess it starts getting a bit complicated. You really just need one Commonwealth character to go inside, and you might as well have Hero in his own brain and Hero of the World, founder of the Commonwealth, Nigel. He's going to go in and do some fun stuff with Ediard on Macathran. Turns out, like I say, he doesn't get there. He turns up in Bienvenido. So then we actually switch across to another character, like I say, this main character called Slavasta. And he is our Ediard character. Where? Let me scroll down. Yeah, so Slavasta, he's just a young kid, and he joins up with the army because he doesn't like the Oh, I haven't really explained. One of the things that I really, really like about this book are the aliens. The bad guys in this book are really cool. They're called the Fallers. So I mentioned them before when Laura runs into them with the quantum trees in the Lagrange point at the beginning. So what happens is that there's this thing where these eggs fall down from this Lagrange point down onto the planet. And the eggs suck humans into them and kind of, it's weird to say this, but the kind of spits out aliens that look like humans, but you're never quite really sure how much the things are humans, how much they're aliens, has their body been snatched or has the mind been snatched or what's actually been replaced here. But it's actually really quite horrific. These eggs are like a new horror thing. Of course, you get vampires, you get zombies, you've got like general gribbly aliens, you've got body snatchers kind of thing. But these eggs, which kind of draw you in, and when you get stuck to them, you get sucked in and they take away your humanity. I actually really like that. I'm sure it's been done many times before in science fiction and horror, but I really love these eggs like that take over your brain and kind of have this. There's like a tantalizing thing going on that makes you come in and you're hypnotized by it. So anyway, near the beginning of the book, Slavaster accidentally gets into one of these eggs and he touches it, but he manages to get free of it, and he's one of the only people who's ever managed to get free of one of these eggs. And he turns into actually a pretty decent soldier, but he starts upsetting things, and then so he gets sent into the capital city as kind of like a chief liaison officer to the Joint Council of Military Stuff. So the whole world is kind of set up in this very political way. He goes into, is it Valen or maybe, did I make a note of the city? Yeah, Valen is the capital city. So he goes there. And what started off as a fun, like, oh, he's going here and he's destroying eggs and he meets up with Nigel, but he doesn't know it's Nigel and Nigel doesn't know it's her. And we, the readers, have to kind of work out that it's Nigel. And what's Nigel doing over here? What is the time like here? So there's all that fun stuff. And then he gets sent to the capital and he starts having to get involved in politics. And this book three or whatever this section is really started to drag. I really did not like this because it's someone who you think, hey, this is a capable soldier. He's a leader of men. He's what we want to do. And then he just gets caught up in an office job. And then he's in board meetings. And then he goes to a tax office. And then other stuff happens and it's just really boring. And then he goes off and then he meets with some other people. It's like, yes, we're going to turn over the order. We're going to make a revolution, and then we're going to set up revolution part cells and stuff. Now, this can be done well in novels. Like, for example, The Moon is a Harsh Mistress is well known as sort of like a handbook for revolution. And you're like, okay, well, you can do all of that kind of stuff. You can take over the water, take over the air. You've got to have disruption. You've got to get the people on your side. You've got to have a charismatic leader. You've got to have operatives in the background. You've got to get weapons from somewhere. You know, all these different kind of things can be interesting. In this book, I just found it really boring. I was like, but what about Laura? What about Nigel? And what about the Fallers and stuff? And all the Fallers just to get taken away. And even though there's some hints of them and there's the Faller research lab and there's the Faller this and there's other things going on, I'm just like, I just didn't like it. And also, one of the things that was really annoying was everything was really, it felt really simplistic and obvious. Like, oh, we're poor people and we've got to stand up for poor people. So now let's get together with the unions, and we'll get together with the meatpacking district, and we'll get together with this people. We'll move everyone together. Oh, and now we've got to get these people on side, and now we've got to get these people and the cab drivers. Yeah, we'll get the cab drivers on side. And it just felt really, in a way, so it kind of annoyed me that this is like, if you're going to do socialism, why do you have to go back and do like Trotsky kind of Leninist kind of revolution stuff? Isn't that like obviously the stupid way to go about it? I mean, isn't that obviously not the good way, because it's just going to lead to more trouble? It's just going to lead to, like, instead of replacing the system with something equal, it just replaces the system with another dictatorship and all this kind of stuff. I was like, they're not learning from the past, because of course the past hasn't happened then. Because the society it's just kind of like always on the edge of industrial revolution style society, because if the technology advances too far, it stops working in the void. So it's kind of, you're always stuck around about this kind of like late 19th century, early 20th century level of technology, but also kind of always stuck around there politically as well. Within Valen and within Bienvenido, the whole stuff. But it just felt really shallow and not, It's not that it wasn't well thought through, it's just like we've moved on a lot politically, and within my science fiction, when I want to read about political maneuverings and political, I want it to be better than this. And it just dragged on again for like another 2 hour section. I was just like, oh, I don't like this at all. And after spending 2 hours with Laura, it was really good. And after spending time with Nigel, that was also interesting, even though I feel Nigel is despicable politically compared to other people. Like he's awful as well, you know. But at least there's some interest there with the interplay between, okay, what Commonwealth technology is going to work in the void and how is that playing out? So all that political stuff really didn't do it for me at all. But then stuff keeps going on and we switch back to Nigel's story, and I realize okay, this of all Peter F. Hamilton's story, this is the one that's told most experimentally in terms of linearity. So it's a very non-linear novel, because then we go back in time and we start reading about, I can't remember her name, there's this Charlotte. It's maybe not Charlotte. It's maybe something else. But so we start following Charlotte, and she's there, and then stuff happens, and she's on a farm, and her mother takes over, and then her mother sells the farm and her, so then she's in an arranged marriage, and then someone swoops in, and the person who swoops in is Nigel, and suddenly you're like, oh, now we're getting the backstory of Nigel and him turning up on Bienvenido inside the void. And now we're getting all of that from Charlotte's point of view and seeing everything that Nigel does from that point of view. And we're like, oh, okay, so now that's happening. Okay, right, we got it all there like that. And so then we go all the way through with that and it's clever. And then she meets up with somebody else in the city. And we're like, oh, that person is this other person from this other storyline. And while there were some little hints what was going on there, because it was told out of time, I'm suddenly like, oh, that whole 2 hour stretch of stuff that I really just was really annoying and I hated and didn't make any sense, now suddenly it all makes sense. And I was like, that was actually everything he was doing there was really clever, because now I understand that this character is involved with this character, and there's influence here and there's influence there. All of this kind of stuff going on, I was like, oh, that's now really clear. It's really clever what he was doing with all that political stuff. It's really clever that all that, you know, why they were doing that kind of revolution. Oh, it's all really clever. But it still meant that I had to get through like 2.5 hours of really boring stuff before I read the section which explained all of that. And so this is my reading experience of this book. There's quite a few bits where I was like, well, what about this, what about Laura? And then right at the very end we're like, oh, that pays off that story of, oh, that makes a lot of sense, everything. And then you read back and it's like, oh, the other thing that annoyed me that we haven't talked about this person for this long, now I understand why. Actually, that person has been there all the way, but it's actually been in the background and influencing the events beforehand. So it's one of those books that as I was reading it, it really annoyed me. But as it went on, it kind of explained away the annoyingness. And this is always a big problem when you do read these books. If you want to just read like a basic fantasy story, this isn't really it. Which is annoying, because if you do, there's this whole 2.5 hour science fiction adventure at the beginning. But if you just want more Commonwealth science fiction adventure, you're like, well, there's a whole lot of fantasy stuff in this and horror stuff in this, which is okay fantasy stuff and pretty good horror stuff. But then you're like, well, what about all the science fiction stuff at the start? And then you're like, well, if you want political stuff, you've got to put up with the science fiction and the fantasy stuff going in. And if you want, you know, and it's like that thing, like, I think everybody will be frustrated with one part of this book. And everybody would really like another part of this book. But it's the interplay between them, which is actually the genius part of the book, however it comes with the boring bits. Maybe I'm just repeating myself there, but it's a battle, I think, that all authors have when they want to do something experimental. It's like, you've got to do something good to keep in the, like, to win over the people who just want the fantasy or just want the science fiction or just want whatever. And they're going to be disappointed by the end, maybe, like, if you actually agree with the politics of the characters in this book, of any of the characters in the book, if you agree with any of the politics and you're like, yes, I agree with Sylvester, no, I agree with this other character, no, I agree with Nigel, you know, everyone who gets involved in this, you're going to be disappointed by someone at the end, because it's a clever book. It's got a lot more nuance. But to get to that nuance at the end of the book, you've got to plow through hours and hours of just boring stuff, which I don't want. In a way, I wish I could have skipped over that. And I could have skipped over that, but then I wouldn't have appreciated the later stuff. Finally, at the end of the story, it does actually wrap up in mostly in a satisfying way. And again, the time stuff happens in a different way because, you know, spoilers for the temporal void, but there is some time travel-y stuff that can happen inside the void too. So that plays into the end. So you kind of get, you can kind of, it's like like near the end, it kind of gets to the point where it's a choose your own adventure. If you want to believe that it stops there, okay, it stops there. If you want to think that it can carry on and other stuff can happen, it could carry on and you keep reading, you know, it's like depending on where you stop reading, like, at which point which character dies, when you can kind of come up with your ending and you're like, oh, I could stop there. And actually, that's a pretty good end if you want this thing to happen. And you could stop another point. Actually, that's a pretty good end. But, you know, it keeps, there's more twists as it goes through to the end. And the final ending I thought was really quite strong. Unlike a lot of Peter F. Hamilton books, and I've complained about this with his books before in the past, often it's like this person is there and they get more and more power and more and more power. And in the end, they get so much power that they just use their godlike powers to sort out everyone else's problems, to defeat the aliens, to move the world, and ta-da, and then we're done, and all these things occur. And it's like, really, that's it? A white male, a young white male, just goes through the story enough until they're rewarded with godlike powers, and then everything gets sorted out at the end. Thankfully, that doesn't happen. This is actually one of the clearest opposite examples of that book. Spoilers. But that's actually another reason why I really like the end of this, because everything happens at the end. And I think, because the end of this book plays off so often, like it plays off Peter F. Hamilton's other books, the end of this book is actually a really clever play on the end of the, the Night's Dawn trilogy. The ending of the Night's Dawn trilogy is kind of referenced in the end of this. The end of the Dreaming Void and Eddiard's story in the Dreaming Void is kind of referenced in this. Some of his other books as well. Even going back to the Greg Mandel series, there's the third book of that. Again, something happens. Young white man gets turned into a god and solved everyone's problems. But that kind of is referenced here as well. So while I think this book could be read as the first Peter F. Hamilton book, maybe, like I say, it's a book in dialogue with other Peter F. Hamilton books. He knows what he does. Peter F. Hamilton is very good at his writing. He's very good at what he writes. He has a certain style of story that he wants to tell. And he's now getting into the point where he can tell interesting variations on the same themes. Like, Sylvester is kind of not, like, if you just go, oh, it's just Eddiard's story again, you'll be like, well, I guess it could be, but this is a more complex story. There's other things going on in the story rather than just the hero's journey. And it makes for more interesting reading. Like, when there's someone guiding Sylvester, he does pretty well. But he makes mistakes, but not mistakes where you just go, oh, and you're going to make a mistake. But that's just going to be a growing experience for you to become a better godlike hero by the end. No, the mistakes in this book, you go, wow, this person, you don't know where their character is going. And some of the other characters within the book as well, some of the minor characters, like, well, is this character going to stick? Like, during a revolution, it's going to get messy. Like, who's going to be the guy who's going to be, you know, killed with an ice pick and edited out of future pictures and edited out of history? Because that's the kind of thing that you've got here going on. And it is more complex, but again, the setup is like, here's Sylvester. He's Eddiard again. Are we going to enjoy it? Yes, if you liked Eddiard, you'll enjoy this. And everyone's like, okay, I've got my comfortable, you know, I've got my comfortable, young, idealistic hero to follow. Do you like Nigel Sheldon? Or do you like in the Great North Road? It's like, do you like someone who has got, his superpower is intelligence and money? If you like someone whose superpower is intelligence and money, let's get on with Nigel Sheldon, because he's an inventor. He has the technology. He has the money. He is like the godlike being purely because he has access to higher technology and money and influence. So let's follow his story. But again, it's more complex in both of these takes on it. But again, to set that complexity up, it kind of says, this is going to be typical stuff that you think it's going to be. And then he kind of twists it around in the second half of the book. Very satisfying. But again, you do have to get through that first section, these big sections of the book. What else do I want to say here? I just scrolled through some of these on Goodreads, because it's a new book and I want to see what people happen. And so someone here, Christina, one star, what just happened? It started out really good. Spaceships entering a void. And then what happened to Laura and Nigel? Who the fuck is Sylvester? And I understand that a lot of people sort of like did not finish, gave up around page 260. And then there was another one star review. Started out really good. Aliens chewing, eating people, frantic escapes of planet, body doubles of both good and bad. And then, nada, total scene frenetic storyline shift that was neither compelling or interesting. The process of getting through this novel quickly became a chore to the point it gets my lowest rating with no rating. Did not finish again. And I realized quite a few people are tackling this book, and it's like, again, people want different things, certainly from a Peter F. Hamilton book, but... Again, a Peter F. Hamilton fan, I think if you stick through the first half of this, you're going to be really well surprised. However, my final rating of this book has to be... Oh, actually, do I have anything else in my notes? Yeah, what I liked. Commonwealth technology alongside industrial revolution-style stuff. I really enjoyed that. All the stuff with the fallers, I liked. What I didn't like, political stuff. Oh, yeah, acts of terrorism and acts of sabotage to, like, you're sabotaging people and then trying to bring them around onto your side. You're like, well, that's really stupid. It's not going to end well. Turns out, stupid plan doesn't end very well each time it happens. And then other people, it's like, well, we'll sabotage this. And then someone else sabotages something else. And like, you sabotaged that. It's like, no, it wasn't us that time, but it helped you. Yeah, it did. What's going on? Everything's like that. And it feels like cheap and stupid. And then it turns out later on, some of the characters discover, you know, what they did was stupid. But again, I don't want to give it away because so far, all that stuff at the beginning is all idealistic. It's like, yeah, we're for the people. We're going to do this. We're going to stop the fallers. We're going to go like that. The ending is remarkable and interesting. The characters, again, some of them are a bit more complex, but there's a lot of the side characters where you're just like, oh, I'm not really sure about this. And Peter F. Hamilton, I mean... I know it's weird to say this because I was thinking about my own novels and I was like, oh, my own whole series of novels with Mine and Tomorrow might not pass the Bechdel test. And you're like, okay, what's that? Two named female characters talking to each other about something that isn't a man. And that does happen in this book, but with like a 22-hour audiobook. How long is this? Let me look it up here on Goodreads. I was like, oh yeah, 640 pages. This is a chunky novel, not by Hamilton standards, but for anyone else, this is a chunky novel, and to have like one or like two strong female characters which kind of never interact, and I guess that's kind of a plot point that they don't interact in a way, but you're just like, why is it that I keep reading this and everybody, like Nigel is female and Nigel is male and Paula Mayo isn't in the book very much and she's female, and this person is male, and then the person who gloms onto that person is female, and when it's a fantasy book, it's kind of understandable. It's like, oh, well, yeah, the women are all just tokens for men. They're all just like, well, you've got to marry in this way and the dowry comes with this. But it's one of those things where sometimes you just go, well, you're just inventing. I know this has been said so many times, but you're inventing the rules of the world from scratch. Why does it have to be this sexist? And at some point, it suddenly goes, and then the army major did this, and then the army major did this, and then the army major did this, and then the army major, she said this. And I was like, oh, that was a female. And it's like, oh, well, I guess it's good that this one character, this one throwaway character by the end of the book, who you would normally expect to be male, actually turns out to be female. But then it felt kind of a bit like it was a bit of tokenism, you know, that the go out there and get them guy, go and get there, get them characters are all males. And the people who kind of sit at home and do paperwork are females. And I was like, well, why can't it be the other way around? So... that is one problem, and I think we'll talk about that more in the next episode when, because Juliana has read The Void, not The Void Trilogy, the Pandora's Star, Judas Unchained, Commonwealth Saga, that's what it's called. So we'll get more to that. What else do I have to say thematically? I don't really know. Politically, it's interesting, but kind of. Yes, and there's also other good stuff. It's fun to read a book where there is a religion and the religion is actually real. That, like, if you do live a good life and you do live a fulfilled life, literally aliens come... Well, not aliens. Angels come and take you away. And I was going to say literally aliens, angels, but they're literally aliens. Anyway, there's some things that come down and take you away to the heart of the void. And that's actually quite satisfying. It says, okay, there really is something to live for. Oh, one other thing that I didn't like is... the obviously bad guys Ediard has to fight against. No, that Slavasta wants to overturn. Like, the government is corrupt. Let's overturn the government. And there's one character that stands out as just too much of a bad guy. And I was like, the fallers were good enough at bad guys. And actually just the overbearing bureaucracy is actually a good enough bad guy. They don't need to just put in a complete sadist, murderer, rapist, drug-addled son of the captain is like the president, the guy, well, it's not president because it's, you're there for life, you know, so the the next in line to the kingdom, the next in line to the title of captain, the first officer, as they call him, who's the son of the main captain, the ruler of the planet. Like, it's just so evil. It's like cartoon evil. I was like, I actually quite liked the not evil, but just I'm doing my jobness of the captain. Because he's like, oh, let's do this. We're keeping everyone in control. And he's got like this, his right-hand man. And the right-hand man is like, oh, we could suppress this. This is right at the beginning of the book. I'm not giving too much away. We could suppress this protest by going out there and killing them all, or going out there and beating them and sending them to prison. Or the place that the protest is happening, we could just relay the cobblestones so they don't have anywhere to protest, or they can't protest in the place that they want to protest, and they've got to protest out of mind's eye. It's like, we should just do that. And they're like, okay, nobody's allowed down that street because we're replacing cobbles. And it's like, he has a refreshingly non-violent take on sorting out the problems. Like, yes, this is good. This is a bad guy who I can really root for, because he's not just a cartoon villain who just rapes women and kills people and takes their money and that kind of stuff. You're just like, and is the son of the king. You're just like, evil princes, not that good. Like really good bureaucrats who are just keeping the system in place for our revolutionary, young revolutionary to fight against. That's kind of, in a way, more like the more mundane villain. And you can still have an interesting villain, but just sort of like their job is kind of like a mundane function. They don't have to be a cartoon villain. I think that would have been a more of a strength. It would have strengthened the novel if this one bad guy had been toned down a bit. Anyway, all this comes to say is that this book could have been easily a 4.5-star book, except for those long sections where I was just like, oh, this is boring. I don't want to read this. And, you know, and some of the subtleties that play out at the end, and I've mentioned this before, I don't want to get too redundant, but the subtleties at the end in the second half rely on a lot of boring stuff happening in the first half, and a lot of switching between storylines where you just go, well, that was like a standalone short story, and this is like a standalone short story, and over here is a standalone short story. Second half, they all come together in a way that's very clever, but you kind of got to get through some boring short stories together. So in the end, I'm going to give it 3.5 stars, kind of like a high 3 stars, 3.5 stars, but certainly not a 4-star book up there with other good books of Peter F. Hamilton, and it's certainly nowhere near a 5-star book. So yeah, if you read other Peter F. Hamilton, this would be really good. If you read this without reading it, going back to other Peter F. Hamilton might seem a little bit, I wouldn't say simple, but story-wise, timeline-wise, and experimentally, all of his other books are like, this happens, then this happens, then this happens, then this happens. And there'll be twists and there'll be reveals, but it's not like, meanwhile, over here, actually, we're back into the past again, and this will reflect on all this other stuff. He doesn't normally do that too much in his books. Even though there's often flashbacks and backstory, it's not in the same story happening that was happening over in this chapter is now happening over here, but from this other point of view, it doesn't happen that so much. So, yeah, 3.5 stars. You can, this has got a 4 average from SFBRP listeners, but it only came out like 3 weeks ago. Odo rated it 4 stars. Let me click on the comments. Oh, Odo is Spanish, so the comments are in Spanish. I don't understand it. Tamahomi is currently reading it. Some other people are currently reading it, but yeah, 4.29 average and generally on Goodreads. But this always happens when a new book comes out. It always gets quite a high rating because all of the fans of that author pick up the book and go, yay, new 5-star book. This is not a 5-star book by any means. But I am a enthusiastic reader of Peter F. Hamilton, as you'll see from our next episode that we're going to get to. So you can become my friends on goodreads.com. You can follow me on goodreads.com. You can also become a part of the SFBRP listener group, the discussion group there. Because so many people on there have all been posting in the books I'd like to see reviewed, you should read Ready Player One. Last night I started Ready Player One. Oh boy, have I got a lot of things to say about just the prologue and the first page of the first chapter of this book. I think I'll stick with it though, but this is going to be interesting. But anyway, yeah, get onto Goodreads, join the discussion group, and have a bigger influence on what I read. Otherwise, you can email me, luke@juggler.net, with any book suggestions or questions or anything like that. I don't reply to emails here on the podcast. I do reply to every single email that I get. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm @LukeBurge on Twitter. luke@juggler.net email. Did I say that? Anyway, that's it for me. Thanks a lot for listening, and I'll catch you next time.